Today's conversation really came about because of you guys. So in the Show Up Speak Up group, which is like my inner circle, you are more than welcome to join if you're not already a part of it. Just go to facebook.com/groups/CarlyNimmo or just search Show Up Speak Up. I went into my group and I asked who you would most like to hear from. And I was kind of surprised when the person who most of you wanted to hear from was actually my assistant, but she's not really an assistant, I guess. She's more of a right-hand person to me in the Radcasters business and in this podcast. She's the person who gets these episodes live out there every week. I do the recording and the editing, and she takes it from there and makes it happen. So she's responsible for that side of things and helped me get this podcast off the ground and helped me create Radcasters. And so you guys told me you wanted to hear from her. You found her a bit of an enigma, which she is, and wanted to dive deep into her story. So I did that. It took a little convincing, but I managed to get her to come on and open up. Now, this is a really raw and real and vulnerable conversation that we're having. Jo has recently been through what has been really one of the toughest periods of her life. She has had to remove all the layers of the onion recently. And so it's still very much on the outside. It's raw. But it's a really insightful conversation because I think sometimes we think we need to have it all together. And really, we just need to be asking ourselves some questions. What I love about this conversation is that Jo took me by surprise and said a few things that made me really think, you know, and take a really good hard look at myself and the labels that I've been putting on myself. And I still don't know the answers, but I'm willing to ask the questions. So without further ado, let's just dive in. Let me introduce you to my right-hand person, Jo Murphy. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
I was always very sort of academic, you know, got to high school and that's kind of what I wanted to do. Like I wanted to live the life of the mind, I guess. There was a time I wanted to be a teacher. And then I kind of, once I found being an academic was a thing, that's what I wanted to do. And I was sort of very single-minded about that. And I'd always, and like even right through, you know, when I started my degree in art history, it was always just, I want to be an academic. And then when I changed to film, it was still, you know, I want to be an academic. And then I reached a point sort of about halfway through my PhD, living in a new country with a partner who was unwell and all these things, where I just wasn't coping. And I was given the option of either carrying on or withdrawing in good standing. And I left that until the very last possible day to make a call. And then, yeah, I decided that I was going to take the option to withdraw in good standing and just do something else for a while and then go back when I was in a space where I sort of felt I could deal with the challenges of life in the ivory tower. So I did a lot of different things. I'd been a bartender while I was at uni, so I ran a whiskey bar in Byron for a while. You know, my partner still wasn't working, so I was just looking for whatever work I could get. And I came across this ad on Gumtree for somebody looking for somebody to run social media accounts, looking for people to run Facebook pages. And I was like, well, you know, I like Facebook. I could probably do that. And honestly, Adam, I still don't really know why he hired me. I think he saw potential, but he did. And from there, I learned, like, pretty much just hit the ground running and learned a lot about organic content. And then sort of from there, started to learn a bit more about Facebook ads. I was getting, you know, sort of reasonable results, I think, because I had a good background in writing and because, you know, it was something I was interested in. Sort of marketing is a lot about how people think and how they operate and kind of, yeah, so I found it really interesting. And then from there, picked up other odd jobs, moved my way through people's networks, sort of learned whatever there was to learn. You know, with you, I sort of learned a bit about podcasting. You know, I worked with people who taught me about coding, just kind of, yeah, picking up whatever random skill there was to be acquired, I acquired it. And that's sort of what I've been doing ever since, I think.
Yeah.
Just acquiring random skills.
So I've got a question for you. You mentioned, what was the first degree? You said film. What was the first one?
No. The first one was art history. So my bachelor's is in art history, and then I got a postgraduate diploma in film studies. And then I have a master's in film and media studies. And then my PhD was film and television. It was bleeding over into marketing a little bit. I actually taught a paper called Celebrity Fashion and Publicity, which the modules I taught was about how people use stars and celebrities to sell products, including films. So, yeah, so I started in art history because I was the top national scholar for art history when I was in my final year of high school. And so it kind of just seemed like the best way to become an academic was to do what I was best at. But then I just always really loved film, and I took a film paper. And then that was kind of it. Like, I looked into how I could potentially segue from art history into film studies. And that's sort of, yeah, what I did. So I did the postgraduate diploma, which was sort of like honours, but it allowed me to change majors. And then from there, yeah, I sort of kept going until I stopped. And then, yeah, moved into work, like having a real job.
And so... what led you to art history? Were you just like... I guess what I'm interested, because essentially you're like a massive sponge. You know, I can throw anything at you. And in terms of, can you find out how this works? Or can you, you know, you're like a major researcher / learner. And so I got a couple of questions here. The first one is art history. What led you there? Were you actually really kind of creative as a kid, or, you know, did you just kind of fall into that?
We all were, like, so I've got four siblings, and we were all very, and my mother was very, like, you know, she sort of encouraged us to do theatre and art and all sorts of stuff. So in the New Zealand curriculum, when you do art, which I did for most of high school, you know, from when it was compulsory to when it became an elective, I discovered I was just really, really interested in learning sort of the why behind the paintings and sort of, you know, the, like, what kind, like, where they came from contextually, sort of how different movements evolved into others. So the second art history became an option as a core subject. I just took it up, and it turned out I was just, yeah, really good at it. And that sort of just, yeah, it was just sort of something I kind of fell into. And then it's, yeah, it seems like the area I was sort of excelling most in, so that became my major at university.
So do you feel like your curiosity was something that was always natural to you, or is it something that was nurtured?
Maybe both. I don't know. Like, I remember, like, people telling me stories about when I was little and always always kind of asking lots of questions about things and wanting to find out more about things. I was always quite interested in sort of what made things tick and how things worked. And I think my parents definitely encouraged that. Like, my dad was a lawyer and my mother's a nurse, so sort of very academic family. For school holiday programs, I went to, like, science camp and stuff like that. So I think that probably helped. But, yeah, we would definitely sort of – I think there was a natural curiosity there, but I think it was also kind of encouraged.
So then, like, the academic side of things –
yeah.
Do you think that perhaps maybe there just wasn't, like, in your, what do they call it? I don't even know what they call it, but you know when your school counselor, job counselor person sits you down, and if there was a job description that was like, you could just spend your entire life learning stuff, would that have been a good option for you, do you think?
I think so. I think that's really why I went into academia, is I just wanted to constantly be learning new stuff and researching and figuring things out. And it was just something I always was really quite interested in doing and sort of interested in, pursuing. And I think I still kind of do the same things. You know, I think I still, in the work I do now, it's still very much like figuring stuff out, trying new ways of doing things. It's just sort of in a different format, which works quite well for me. Like, you know, academia is obviously, you know, very rigid rules and very kind of things have to be done in a very certain way. Whereas I think what I do now allows me to do what I love, but do it a little bit more creatively, which I definitely enjoy.
Yeah. And maybe even with a bit more freedom around it in some respects, but maybe not.
Yeah. In some respects, for sure. In terms of cultural stuff, for sure. Like, you know, academic culture is very much a, you must show up to this and you must kind of do that. And there's certain expectations. Whereas I think in the freelance world, you can kind of, if a culture that you're working in doesn't suit you, you can find something else that does.
Mm. Even though that can be extremely challenging, like making those shifts.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, some of the most challenging things I've done, like learning to say no to people, is something I still have a lot of trouble with. But I think the more that I do it, the better my working life gets. Like, the more I sort of figure out what I do and don't want, the better things get for me sort of day to day.
Yeah, it's all about boundaries, isn't it? And healthy boundaries. And
figuring out
those boundaries can sometimes only come post the event, because you don't realize there was needed to be a boundary there in the first place.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I think, yeah, boundaries are something that you learn. Like, something happens and you're just like, well, I don't really think this is okay. And then from there you sort of, you know, figure out what you're willing to accept and what you're not. Which can be difficult, for sure. Like, as a freelancer, like, the sort of lack of rules and boundaries can be a great thing, but it can also be quite difficult to navigate, because you kind of have to figure it out for yourself, or you kind of have to set your own rules around how you want your life to be.
Mm. And your livelihood is at stake too, a lot of the time. You know, you're working with someone and they're providing a good chunk of your income. And so there'd have to be a bit of fear around pissing that person off. So I want to share something that, when I first started Killer Copy, I had one client who made up about 80% of my income, and things were really great for, well, they weren't really great. They were great income wise. So the money was coming in and it was good, and it was good money. Low paying, high volume stuff. But I'd never created any boundaries around it, because this person was my first client. So I was so eager to please this person that, I did some ridiculous stuff. I worked in the spare room, at my nana's house on the day of her wake. The day of my best friend's wedding, I sat dressed with my makeup on and had to knock out a few scripts before walking her down the aisle.
And the
nana's wake thing was the last straw.
Because,
you know, what I realized was that the weird thing was, right, like, I did everything in my power to keep this client happy. I worked for them every day. I put a lot of effort and time into making sure that everything was always good. And then one year, the work just started to slow down. They had a team. So, you know, I was friends with a lot of the people on the team, because I've been working with them for a number of years by this stage. And I went to them and I said, so things have slowed down a bit. Is everything okay? And one of the girls said, oh, so the owner hasn't contacted you? And I was like, no. What? She goes, oh, well, we've stopped using voiceovers. And so they hadn't bothered to let me know that, like, 80% of my income just gone overnight. For someone who I had worked the day of my nana's funeral for.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so fucking shocking. But then, you know what I did? They came back to me and they were like, oh, we've decided we're going to do a few here and there. So the amount of work dropped off substantially, but there was still work coming in from them, and it slowly started to build again. And in the end, I ended up a couple of years later, or maybe four years later, still working for this person, even though it felt really disrespectful by that point, because they had just dumped me. It was very clear they didn't give a shit about me. And then they packed up and disappeared. And I had about $7,000 worth of outstanding invoices with me.
Yeah, I think I remember you telling me about this, actually.
I think it was just after, maybe about 6 months after you'd started working with me.
Yeah, no, I do remember you telling me about that. But yeah, I think that was, I had someone a little bit like that. And it was, I think the hard thing to learn was that just because someone needs you doesn't mean that they actually value you. And I think that was something my instincts are getting a little bit better for. But yeah, I've definitely, it's hard when you sort of develop these working relationships with people and you sort of feel like you're, you know, contributing something valuable and that they do value, only to sort of discover that, yeah, that it's not kind of the dynamic that you thought it was, that it's
not an equal exchange.
That they need what you do, but they, you know, either they don't want to pay for it or they don't really appreciate it, or yeah. And that sort of, it definitely gets exacerbated as your skill set gets wider. Also, I've found that I've definitely coming across more people who want the work that I do, but they don't really value it, and they'll pretend to, but it's to try and get what they want. And it's kind of, yeah, developing a nose for that sort of thing has been quite a big lesson for me, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So I know before you mentioned that you found a job on Gumtree, and that was Adam, who I will be getting on the podcast because it's so ridiculous that he hasn't been on yet. And that was really interesting. I found that interesting because when I put the job out for a person to help me with Killer Copy, which is what you were going to be doing at the time, Mabel was just a little baby, I think, was she? Or
she was, maybe it was about, 3 years ago now, or just over 3 years ago.
Yeah. So she would have been pretty small. And I had put this job out on Facebook with a crazy job description and some weird questions and stuff, and had lots of responses, yet only two people who bothered to fill in the questions. And, you know, I don't think you know this, but the people who responded was you, obviously. And the other person was Miranda.
No way.
Yeah, from Dottie.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah.
Our work life is so incestuous.
I know, it's so incestuous. Insane. So I want to explain this. So with the Adam thing, Adam was my first member at my co-working space. And so I knew Adam through that. And then somehow I found you. I don't even know. We must have been talking about something. He had contacted me about something, and then he mentioned that he was also working with you, which was totally weird. Oh, because he had come to me and asked if I knew anyone who would be able to fill that role for him. And I was like, not really. But then, yeah, you filled it, and then you came to me to fill it. And then the weird thing is that then Miranda was the other person who went for the job, and Miranda, you ended up working with Miranda at Dottie.
Yeah, it's very incestuous. Like, I kind of have worked my way through that whole network, but it's been good. I think that's why I've never needed sort of a website or to sort of self-promote, because it's sort of like, I don't know, it's like the How You Met Your Mother thing. It's like, you know, have you met Ted? It's like, have you met Joe?
Yeah.
Someone needs help with something. Like, yeah, now I'm working on Lisa's Facebook ads and kind of going, just working my way through like that entire network of people. It's been good, but sometimes it's kind of just like, it feels all these sort of crossing threads. It's a bit mental.
It is. So let's talk about what it is that you do.
Oh God. Right. So at the moment I'm mostly doing Facebook, or both organic content and ads. And I've sort of moved into doing some copywriting. So I've been writing a lot of sales pages. What else do? I upload podcasts for people. I do everything podcast except for audio editing. That is not my zone of genius. So I've stayed well away from that and left that in Neil's capable hands. I do different roles for different people. Some people I sort of have quite a multifaceted role. Some people I just do the one thing. So I guess the way I figure sort of what I do is that I'm like the builder who works with the architect. So people have these ideas about things that they want to create or stuff that they want to do, and I kind of figure out the nuts and bolts of how to actually make that happen.
Yeah, like, which is what you – that's because when I originally hired you, it was for Killer Copy, and then I don't even know, it just didn't happen because I think Neil just handled it all. at the time?
Yeah, I think it was a help desk thing that you just want to be answering emails, and then it kind of...
That's right. Yeah, I did. Yeah. I had a help desk set up, and then I realized that it was not working. And
it kind of just morphed into all these other things.
Yeah, because I think what happened was I think I'd started Carlosophies.
Yeah.
And I got your help.
Yeah. No, I remember that. I remember, I think I kind of want to start a podcast. And you're like, do you know anything about podcasting? I was like, nope, but I'm going to find out.
That's right. And so then I went to you. I said, look, I've got the audio side of things covered, clearly.
Yeah.
I just need someone to make the rest of the shit happen. And you were like, okay, cool. And so then you went off and you made all the rest of the shit happen.
Yeah, I think that's just my response to everything is if I don't know how to do something, I'm just like, you know what, I don't know, but I will find out.
Yeah.
It like becomes like a personal challenge if there's something I don't know how to do. I'm just like, I am going to learn how to do that and I'm going to learn to do it well. It's kind of my approach to everything.
Yeah, that's super cool. And then, you know, I started getting asked a lot about other people wanting to podcast.
Yeah.
And so then I went to you and said, oh, so in addition to doing my podcast stuff, would you be interested in helping me put together Radcasters?
Yeah.
And so I did part of the bits about the audio and the messaging and the automation system side of things. And you said, I'll create the iTunes hosting side of things and some marketing stuff was what you helped with. And then we just built it.
Yeah, it was very, it's changed a lot, I think, you know, because obviously podcasting is something that's constantly sort of changing and evolving and there's new stuff all the time. And I think as more people came in, it sort of becomes clearer what people actually want to know and what they actually need. But yeah, it's been quite interesting seeing sort of how it's evolved and sort of, I quite like that podcasting is a constantly changing field because it gives me something to just sort of keep learning about. Which is sort of, yeah, holy grail for me. Anything that where I can get pretty good but then keep learning, I always really enjoy.
And I guess that's what you like about the Facebook ad space too, right? Because it is a constantly changing space.
Yeah, for sure. And I've found sort of, so ended a really bad relationship, had a lot of more sort of thinking space and it's been, So, I mean, I'd sort of forayed into Facebook ads. I'd learned a little bit, but I just didn't really have sort of the mental capacity to devote as much energy to it as you need to get really good at it. Like I think there's a lot of people who do Facebook ads, but there's not many people who kind of are able to sort of eat, sleep and breathe it in the way that you need to. So yeah, sort of having that mental space to be able to do that. I'm having a lot of fun with Facebook ads these days just because, yeah, I've found that I've got that space to kind of really think and be creative and accurate and kind of, yeah, it's been really, really good having a lot of fun with that.
So what do you, okay, here's a question for you. What do you feel have been the big pivotal moments in your life?
Well, first one was definitely leaving academia because I'd invested, like even from when I was in high school, I'd kind of invested my whole identity into that and sort of the idea that if I didn't make it as an academic, there was nothing else that I was good at and there was nothing else that I could do, which is why I think I stuck with it for so long. Even though it was sort of destroying my health and I kind of wasn't managing very well, I think I just stuck with it so hard because I sort of saw it as, and I mean, I think that they condition you to kind of believe that too, because obviously they want you to finish your PhD, but I think I saw it as kind of, it's this or nothing. So when I left, when I sort of made that decision to leave, thinking at the time that I would go back, it was sort of like, well, who am I without this label? Like who even am I? Like, what am I good at? What do I even enjoy? Like, and I sort of, spent a lot of time trying to figure that out. And I'm still kind of figuring that out, but I think having to let go of the thing that I'd sort of, I sometimes say that, you know, labels are for cans of tuna, not the human experience. And I think having to let go of that label kind of, sort of made me really sort of stop and think about who I actually was and who I wanted to be and what was important to me outside of that. Like, I think it's very easy to completely allow yourself to be defined by a label. Like, I know that there's people who completely define themselves by the fact that they're a mother and they kind of lose themselves in parenthood. And I think, you know, it's easy to do that with jobs as well, you know, or, you know, political affiliations, whatever, when you sort of become the label and kind of lose yourself. And I think that sort of what leaving academia kind of confronted me with was the fact that I'd invested so much into this particular image of myself that without it, I kind of had no idea who I was or what I wanted to do or who I wanted to be. Yeah, I'd be interested to see what my life would be like if I hadn't left. I think I'd still be very much completely consumed by that. Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, it wouldn't have been good because, say, you know, there'd been funding cuts and I'd lost my job or whatever. You know, I think there would have eventually come a point where I would have had to try and let go of that label and figure out who I was without it. But I think, yeah, the fact that I kind of did it earlier rather than later might have been a good thing.
What was it that you struggled with there? What was it in the work that you were doing or in the environment that you were in that wasn't working for you?
I really struggled with so I'd come from an environment at Otago which was very creative and very kind of whatever project you want to do, you just go and do it, to the PhD, which was very sort of, you must produce this amount of words and it must cover this and it must do that. And plus, I'd moved to a new country as well. So New Zealand and Australia have an agreement where New Zealanders are considered domestic students in Australia. So I was in a completely new country, completely different language, like used in academia, like we call them papers, you guys call them units. So I'd say things and people would have no idea what I was talking about. Yeah. So I was an international student, but I wasn't treated like one and I wasn't sort of given any of the kind of support that international students usually get. And I think as well, it was the pressure that I put on myself. Like, I think when you get into that space of, if I don't succeed at this, then who the hell am I? Like, there is no other option for me here. Like, either I do this or I am nothing. So I think really that was kind of what killed it for me in the end. I think if I'd been able to approach it from a more, this is something I would like to do as a career, this is something I am good at, but if I don't make it, it's not the end of the world. You know, I was putting myself under a lot of pressure. I was teaching, I ran a conference, I was presenting at seminars, you know, doing all the things that you need to do to try and stand out to get an academic job. Yeah, I think if I'd had a more relaxed approach to it, maybe I would have finished. But I think, yeah, the amount of pressure I put on myself because I felt like I had no other options probably just completely overwhelmed me. I think that's really where the wheels came off.
And so what led you to, do you think if you were at your old university that you would have seen it through?
I think I would have seen it through, but I also think with the academic job market like it is now, I probably would have just ended up staying in the same town, just taking whatever work I could get. It's hard to say what my life would be like. It's kind of like a sliding doors thing.
Totally.
It's
sort of, I was just thinking that too.
Yeah, it's like, you know, whatever road you take, it's like, you know, there's no right or wrong choice. It's just different paths that you maybe could have ended up on. I mean, I might have ended up in high school teaching or something like that, because if you teach a certain number of hours at university level, you become qualified to teach high school. Maybe I would be a high school teacher still living in Dunedin. I don't really know. It's hard to say.
And so let's talk about coming over to Australia. So what brought you here was love?
No, actually. It was the PhD. It was
Right.
So basically I had been working on adaptations and remakes, and there was only really one other person who does that and does it very well. I met him at a conference and I really that was who I wanted to be my PhD supervisor. And he said yes. So that's why I moved to Australia. I moved to Melbourne to do my PhD. So yeah, so that's why I ended up in Melbourne. So I had been doing my PhD for about a year and a half, 2 years. I was not in a good space mentally, and I had just started seeing this girl, and she decided to move up to Byron Bay. And originally the idea was I was going to go up there for the summer, come back, finish my PhD, and then sort of figure out what I wanted to do from there. But I kind of just moved to Byron and never left. So, yeah, and then that sort of, you know, the wheels started to come off a little bit more then. I mean, it wasn't an easy relationship. You know, she was in and out of rehab and sort of quite volatile at that point. So between that and, you know, I did actually have a really good group of friends in Byron, which kind of made it hard to get work done. So yeah, that sort of when the wheels really started to come off, I was having a lot of issues with anxiety and stuff like that. And then it just got to a point where I wasn't managing in Melbourne, and I managed a little bit better for a while in Byron, but then it sort of all started to fall apart again. So that's when I ended up withdrawing. And that was quite scary because, like, my PhD was basically my sole source of income at that point. So I was on a research stipend. So from there, I'd worked in hospo before. So I worked in this tiny little whiskey bar, which there was only three of us working there. The owner was laundering money through it. It was absolutely mental. But it was a lot of fun. And then that place got closed down by the council. So I had to find other work. And that was when I started sort of scouring Gumtree every single day, because my partner at the time had quite bad sort of agoraphobia. She didn't want to go out. She didn't want to work because she just couldn't handle it. You know, I had to try. There was a period of time where we were living solely on her Centrelink, and that wasn't a lot of fun. So then I found Adam. And yeah, even though I had the qualifications and I taught social media and marketing, like sort of the theory of it, but I'd never actually done it. But yeah, he sort of took a chance on me and kind of just let me learn the ropes as I went. And then, yeah, from there, everything kind of evolved and I sort of started figuring out what I actually like to do. That was a big part of kind of figuring out who I was outside of academia, because I really enjoyed the writing part of it, like the copywriting part of it. I enjoyed sort of the ins and outs of testing audiences. So that was kind of a good moment in terms of figuring out who I was when I wasn't an academic, and sort of showed me the things that I loved or that I was good at, that kind of, you know, that I was still me. It was just in a different job.
Yeah.
So that was quite, yeah.
Sort of, yeah, and there's a lot of things that you could translate context across to us too, you know.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Definitely the research skills, I think, have definitely helped me. And the, you know, having to be a really good writer, I think that helped as well. For a while, things were going really well with that, and I was picking up more and more work. But then things sort of started to go downhill in my relationship. It started out with just little jabs and little kind of just little things, finding out that she'd told people stuff behind my back, just little things to start. And I kind of noticed that I was starting to drop the ball a bit at work. And I think I correlate the two quite strongly now, but I don't think I did at the time. I think I just saw it as sort of like a failing within myself. That was kind of difficult, that I was sort of just sort of starting to figure out who I was outside of this job.
Or and the relationship was making you question your
worth.
Yeah,
so I kind of, but then I kind of, because she was so unwell, I think, you know, I sort of had this brief period of sort of figuring out who I was independent of academia, but then I kind of ended up investing my whole self into this kind of caregiver role. You know, always having to be sort of responsible for everything and in charge of everything, that I kind of, I'd had this brief moment of finding something I was quite good at and that I enjoyed, but then it all sort of started to fall apart again in much the same way, that kind of putting too much pressure on myself, plus all the sort of external criticism. You know, I definitely, you know, was still enjoying things with work, and I was picking up new skills and learning new things, and kind of, it was still kind of going on in the background, But I was definitely in a place where I was sort of, again, sort of, you know, didn't really know who I was or what I wanted to do. And, yeah, as a result, I was kind of dropping the ball a lot. And then, yeah, when things sort of started to finally come to a head, it was just I wasn't capable of anything. Like, I'd had to drop stuff. I'd had to, you know, things that I really enjoyed and that I really wanted to do, I just didn't have the capacity to do it. It's sort of, you know, things had sort of escalated to a point where if I made a mistake, she would just look at me and she'd just be like, I just don't know how someone can get it so wrong all the time. Yeah, and sort of calling me names. And then some of her family was kind of equally as bad. So, yeah, I just wasn't coping. But then sort of everything kind of fell apart. And then it was, again, sort of a case of trying to figure out who I was, because I wasn't the academic anymore. I wasn't the caregiver anymore. Yeah, so I'm still kind of getting back to figuring that out, but I think I've reached a point now where I'm letting go of labels a little bit. I'm kind of, I just sort of treat my job or whatever the same as I treat my sexuality, to be honest. Like, it's just, I use whatever label helps people understand me best at the time. And I don't keep my labels and my self-esteem in the same place. It's sort of where I'm at. So I'm sort of learning what it is I actually like and what I really enjoy doing. And it's kind of been, it's been a good process. It's sort of starting from scratch. Like, there's things that I know I enjoy and that I'm good at. And now I'm sort of getting the opportunity to kind of really invest myself in those. And I think you've probably seen a difference too.
Yeah, totally.
I think a lot of people have since, that I'm much more on the ball and I have much more sort of thinking space and I'm much more confident in my decisions. So yeah, that's sort of where I'm at now. Like, I've sort of figured out a little bit what I'm good at and what I like doing. I'm just sort of trying to make cool stuff with people that I like. That's sort of...
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Where I'm at. Yeah.
I like that. So have you had a chance to think about the future? Have you had a chance to figure out what it is that you would like most to be doing?
I think because I'm kind of still figuring that out. Like, I used to be very clear on what I wanted and sort of where I was going and that sort of thing. But I'm kind of in a space now where I'm just like, I have no idea. Like, I know what I like to do and I know sort of in figuring, acquiring new skills, stuff like that. But in terms of an actual career goal, I think this is probably the first time in my life that I don't have one.
Yeah. Which is a good thing. It's like, that can be a freeing thing because then it allows things to unfold rather than us needing them to go a certain way,
Sure. Like, I don't have a number in my head in terms of the amount of money that I want to make. I don't have sort of a title that I want to have or a number of website subscribers that I want to have. I mean, really, I just want to be doing interesting stuff within interesting businesses. And that's pretty much about where it is. And I know that's not sort of, I feel like that's not kind of like the right answer to where you see yourself in 5 years. Like, I actually have no idea.
But nobody does.
Yeah,
I mean, some people do, but then most of them are pretty miserable.
So this is definitely the first time I just haven't had an answer to that question. Like, my whole life I've had a very clear answer to that question, and this is sort of the first time that I haven't. And I think that sort of freed me up a lot to kind of be more creative and kind of, yeah, enjoy work more and enjoy life more, for sure.
Yeah, because there's less pressure on you to fit in a certain mold of your own creation, really.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I think that's really what it's always been, is I put these expectations on myself. And now I'm kind of just like, just do whatever you want. It's kind of, if a job comes along and it's interesting, take it. If you don't want to do it, don't. Like, it's kind of... Yeah, it's not really, business 101 type thing where you're supposed to have a plan, but, it's working for me for now and it's kind of allowing me to really sort of, figure out who I am without the labels.
Yeah, and sometimes the best plan is no plan.
Yeah, I'm on the no plan.
Sweet. Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's On the Couch. Biggest fear.
Wow. Right now, my biggest fear is that I'll be stuck. Like, I think I don't ever want to get back to a place where I'm like, where I just stay complacent and never kind of keep, that I get to a place where I'm sort of not moving forward in some way. Like, I think that's why when my relationship broke down, I left Brisbane, because I have great friends there. I had a great life there, but I could just see myself never leaving and just staying there doing the same things with the same people. I think that's probably my biggest fear, is that things will never change or that I'll get stuck in a rut and sort of look back on my life and sort of feel like I didn't make the most of the time that I had.
Yeah. I totally relate to that one right now.
Yeah.
Struggle. What are you struggling with at the moment?
Struggling with at the moment, trusting my own instincts. I've definitely learned a lot in terms of who is actually valuing what I bring to the table and who is kind of just looking to take advantage. But yeah, trusting my, I often kind of have to ask people and sort of be like, is this actually as bad as I think it is, or am I just totally overreacting? I think because I went through a lot of gaslighting in my relationship where, you know, I'd say things that I'd be made to feel like I was crazy, that, you know, that I was looking at the sky and being told that it was green, that I've lost a lot of that trust in my own gut. So I'm sort of, I'm trying to rediscover that, but that's definitely hard to sort of, you know, really, really trust your own instincts.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know, evil bitch in our heads, what does yours say?
Changes from day to day. The biggest one at the moment is probably you are hard to love. That's a big one. Or the other one is like, you're never going to be as good as other people, or that you're kind of like the person that people go to when they can't afford someone else, or don't want to, you know, or they don't want to work with someone else, that you're kind of everybody's second choice. I know that's not true.
No, so not true.
But that's a big one, that I'm sort of the person people go to when they don't have another option, that it's that they, you know, that if the person they actually want to work with says no, they come to me. I can kind of understand where that comes from, because there probably was a time when I was just brand new starting out that was probably quite true. But now I don't think it is, but it still comes back from time to time. Yeah. For sure.
What does failure mean to you?
Failure to me, I think, yeah, it comes back to the biggest fear thing. I think failure to me, never taking advantage of the, or sort of never sort of doing the things that you always wanted to do, or sort of allowing yourself to get stuck or to stay complacent because of fear or feelings of inadequacy, to never take that step and to never actually step out and try something new. Failure to me is sort of, yeah, stuck in routine.
Yeah. Success. What does success mean?
Doing cool stuff with people that you like. I think that's it. I think for me, that's what success is. If you can start work every day and be excited about it, like even if you're making next to nothing, even if you were living in your mother's basement, I think success is, yeah, making cool stuff with people that you like.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with living in your mother's basement either, by the way.
Well, you know, it's, I think it's good because it's going to push me not to be complacent, that, you know, that I do want to actually get out of here. That's why I chose the basement over Brisbane, because Brisbane I would just stay, whereas here I'm motivated to get out. I don't know where I'm going yet, but
yeah. Yeah, well, you'll figure it out. You'll figure it out. There's no rush. Life is very short but very long. So
this is true. Yeah, I did have a brief moment where I was like, you know what I should do? I should buy a one-way ticket for my 30th birthday and just keep going, start in the States, go to, like, just keep going to wherever, and then when I figure out where home is, I'll know. Like, that was kind of a plan. I don't know how practical that is, but it's a plan.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's a plan, and I think I might have said this to you once before. It's a good plan, providing you're not running away from yourself.
Yeah, because, I think you have to be running to rather than running from.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I think it's really, you know, as someone who has moved around a lot and tried a whole bunch of different things, but essentially has never felt home, what I figured out was that, you know, when I moved there or moved here or moved wherever, there's no geographical cure for you. Like, there's no escaping you. So
yeah, for sure. But I think, you know, when I went to New York, it was very much a sense of, this is my place, these are my people.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a possibility I might find, I mean, I might still find that there. And I think that's, you know, it's always kind of been my spiritual mecca. But I think if I explore, I may sort of find that somewhere else too. You never know. We'll see.
Might as well go on a big adventure.
Well, I have the opportunity to do that now, which is exciting and daunting at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. The unknown is scary as fuck, right? But it's also pretty exhilarating and exciting.
Yeah, well, I feel like it's kind of, I've got kind of a unique opportunity, really. I mean, I'm not in a relationship anymore. I don't have children. You know, I work online. So really, I've got an opportunity that I think a lot of other people would kill for. It should just be able to take off and do whatever. So I figure might as well live the dream, or try to.
True. Freedom. What does freedom mean?
What does freedom mean? Freedom means... It means putting things down just because they're heavy, like feeling like you can put stuff down without making excuses or having to apologize for yourself. I think that's what freedom would feel like to me, to just be able to let things go without sort of feeling like I have to carry them further or feeling like I'm somehow obliged to be weighed down by them, if that makes any kind of sense.
Yeah, that does make total sense. I really like that. Yeah. Yeah, that is a really interesting idea. It's so funny because most people say choice, but really it is about letting go, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely there's things that you can't sort of drop, but I think freedom is the opportunity to occasionally just put them down because, you know, life stuff is heavy. Like, you know, I assume parenting is kind of like that. You can't, you know, totally drop the ball, but at the same time, just being able to take a breath for a minute. I think that's freedom, is just being able to put things down and take a breath without, you know, feeling totally torn up over it.
Yeah, because the longer you hold things, the heavier they get too, right?
Yeah, the more awkward they get to carry. And so eventually you just end up weighed down by all the stuff and you just never allow yourself a break. So I don't think it's necessarily completely letting go of everything, but yeah, just being able to occasionally just cut yourself a break, I think that's freedom.
Yeah. So this one I don't usually ask, but I'm going to ask it of you.
Okay.
What does your ideal day look like?
You've already asked me that and I couldn't answer.
But I think you can now. I think you can answer it now because you're in a different place.
This is true. I think it's hard because I can see so many different ideal days and so many different paths that I could take. I think I'm at this crossroads point where kind of anything is possible. It could be me on the streets of New York in my favorite neighborhood getting a coffee with my friends who I haven't seen in forever. Or it could be me, you know, in Philadelphia working behind the counter at this tattoo shop that I'm obsessed with. Or it could be me in Europe, you know, up in the hills. It could be, it could be children. It could be just being by myself. It could be anything. Like, I can see so many different days and they all kind of feel ideal in different ways. So one answer is hard, but I can see a lot of different possibilities.
And that is so amazing. And that just shows how far you've come in the last few months too.
Yeah, it's crazy to think it's only been like 4 months since I landed on Lisa's doorstep and as a total wreck who had no idea what I was going to do and sort of just, trying to stick to what was familiar, even though it sucked. Like, you know, that sort of couldn't even deal with the fear of the unknown. And now the unknown is kind of my whole life and I'm kind of embracing that.
Yeah, that is super cool and very inspiring. And you know what? And that's so cool because I think, and I even love that concept that there isn't an ideal day, but there is possibility, you know? And I think when I asked the question, you know, from my perspective, it was originally more just to get you thinking that there was more possible, you know, and to have a think about how you might like to spend your time now that you had the freedom. So it's lovely to hear that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, when I look at sort of business courses and stuff like that, a lot of them ask you sort of where do you want to be in 6 months? And they're all kind of expecting concrete answers. Like a lot of the coaching stuff that I see in terms of like, let's make a plan, it's like all expecting concrete answers. Whereas I think, like what would happen if we kind of stop for a minute and just say, well, there's about 12 different answers here and maybe I don't have to choose one. Maybe I can just sort of see what happens.
Yeah. Totally.
Rather than, because if but we don't tie that, ourselves.
I think on the coaching side of things, I've been exploring this today, right? Because on the coaching side of things, I work a little bit differently to most people, but most people want the answer.
Yeah.
And like you said, there are so many possible answers. There isn't answer.
Yeah. Well, I've got the first tattoo I ever got was I go to seek a great perhaps. Like that idea that, you know, that a good question is better than a right answer. You know, questions open doors, whereas answers are kind of finite.
So true. Oh, my God, Joe, this is so amazing. Like, I am so glad that we did this because because this is exactly what, like, I've just been struggling today with myself needing to provide outcomes or, you know, what value do I bring and how can I deliver that best? And what I've seen is people generally want to know what the outcome is going to be for them. But for me, it's never about that. It's about the exploration that takes place.
It's about the questions that you ask. And then if you're lucky, those questions will lead. I think if a question leads to an answer, you've kind of reached a dead end. But if you ask a question, it leads to more questions. I think that you're onto something.
The great unraveling.
the great perhaps.
Exactly. I love it. The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug. I don't know where we can tell people to find you.
You can find me, yeah, joe@radcasters.com. That's where I live.
Cool. So if you do want to connect with Joe, perhaps join the Show Up Speak Up group. And, you know, Joe's in there. And she's my right-hand woman at Radcasters. So if you are part of that community, you'll already know and love her. But, yeah, if you want to connect, then maybe Show Up Speak Up would be a good place.
Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes, seeing as I'll be writing my own.
That's going to be awkward. Maybe I should write your bio.
I've tried to do it so many times and I just couldn't. Like, I'm just like, I'm a, you know, queer vegan slacktivist who has a million different jobs. I'm just like, it doesn't, yeah, trying to write a bio for myself is actually really quite difficult.
Trying to write a bio in general is a really difficult exercise. And I just posted something, well, you were going to comment on
it.
Asking a few questions. Actually, I'll share it. Why not, hey?
Maybe I should do that. Maybe I should post in the group and be like, right, who wants to write my bio and take a line from everybody and put it in there. That sounds like I'll get everyone else to write my bio.
That sounds like a good idea. We can do a collaborative experience.
Yeah.
So these were the questions a friend who I'm going to try and get on the podcast too posted on his page. And I just replaced his name with mine because it would make zero sense if it was his name. But the questions were, you know, what makes Carly Nimmo different to anyone else? What's the one thing you think I could become the best in the world at? What do you think of when you think of the Carly Nimmo brand? What 3 to 5 words come to mind? And what do you think my mission is? Because so often we think we know what we're providing for other people, but we so don't.
No, and that's, again, sort of what I've been learning is, like, not to, you know, box myself in too much. Like, you know, trying to find those definitive answers, it doesn't work out.
Yeah. And like you said, labels belong on tuna cans.
Not the human experience.
The takeaway. Exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
I guess I would maybe want people to think about the labels that they put on themselves and how invested they are in those labels. And if someone was to take those labels away from you, like, would you know who you were? Or how would you manage without those labels? How would you help people to understand you if some of those labels got taken away? That would be, yeah.
Yeah.
The question I would ask.
That's a big question.
It's a tough one. Like, take away, yeah, you know, take away mother, take away, you know, former, you know, what's the one you say, like radio jock, like former radio jock? That's what, yeah, take that away, take away podcaster, away whatever.
And even beyond that, you know, the label that I've often put on myself as mediocre. You know, all of those are labels that we've just applied to ourselves. And
So what happens if you take those familiar labels away and you kind of have to accept that there might be something else, or you're forced to accept there might be something else? Like, what would you do, or who would you be without those labels that you sort of cling to? Heavy question, but I think it's a good one.
It is a good one, and I'm going to explore it. I might even explore it in a free flow combo.
Cool. Living without labels.
Yeah, living without labels. Hey, there's the episode title.
You reckon? Awesome. I was wondering what that was going to be. I figured, yeah, all else failing, queer vegan slacktivism.
We can put that in the show notes.
Sure.
Maybe they're probably keyword searchable. Yeah, maybe we should have them the episode title.
Slacktivism for sure. I'll put that in the image tags.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Joe. I really appreciate it. You can bill me.
Yeah, well, the fact that you managed to get me on the show at all is kind of a miracle, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I am a miracle worker, so.
This is true. It's what you do.
All right, love. I'll catch you on Slack.
Yep. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
See ya. Bye.
Thanks for tuning into Carlosophies. If you really dug this app, I'd love for you to share it with someone who you think might also dig it. Really helps me to spread the word. And if you'd like to get to know me a little better and see some in-between app thoughts and insights and be around some super cool people, join my Facebook tribe, Show Up Speak Up. Search Show Up Speak Up in Facebook or head to carlynimmo.com/tribe. Until next time, be real, be rad. Peace out.